Hey, it's Travis, and welcome to another episode of Marketing Unboxed. This episode is part of the leadership series, and I interviewed Kyle Lacey, who is the SVP of marketing at Seismic. And I always really enjoy my conversations with Kyle. We typically talk about all kinds of things, and that's what happened in this episode. We talk about the transition and the experience of going through an acquisition. The company he was with, Lessonly, I guess still is with, he was acquired by Seismic several months ago. And we talked about what that meant from a leadership perspective. How did it affect him? What changed? How did he have to change? We talked about seeing talent beyond a resume, the importance of finding your niche as a leader, the gift of giving yourself some grace, and why end goals aren't really a thing. I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. I enjoyed the conversation. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Thanks for hopping on today and being a part of the leadership series of Marketing Unboxed. And really big year for you over the past 12 plus months. You were the CMO of Lessonly, right? And then Seismic acquired Lessonly. Mm-hmm. Is that what went down?
Yep.
And now you're the vice president of marketing there, right?
So I'm SVP of marketing. I'm running marketing for Seismic, which is a very different beast than Lessonly because it's just a very different type of company.
So how are they different? What they do different things or different operating?
A lot of reasons. Like it's so Seismic is an enablement software that helps with content management for sales teams, helps with the delivery of content to prospects for sales teams, but also helps with training and coaching and helps reps use social. And it's a complete enablement platform. So it made sense that Lessonly would fit into the training and coaching component of what Seismic does. And it has been been gangbusters. Like they bought us in August and Seismic had its largest Q4 in company history. And we blew past our annual goals because the products fit so well together. They were a partner of ours previously. So the difference is that Lessonly was, 250 employees, quite a few in Indy, north of $30 million in revenue. So Seismic's very different. Lessonly was 250 employees, a lot in Indy, right? We had over 1,000 customers. Lessonly was a high velocity sale, like mostly commercial SMB. Seismic is enterprise, 1,500 employees, did end of the year at $280 million in annual revenue run rate, and we have teams and offices in UK, Germany, France, and Australia in Sydney. Wow. So it's just a very different beast. And, the combination was good because Seismic needed a down market product and Lessonly fits very well into their enterprise product. And, Seismic's still growing at 50%.
Wow.
So it's just a different type of company.
And everybody, the team is still pretty much intact there in Indy. It was pretty seamless.
Yeah, it was actually, the acquisition was favorable across the board. We didn't let go of anybody. It's a growth story over everything else, right? It's how do we continue growing Seismic in a way that's meaningful? You do have the normal attrition that happens when you have people come into a larger company but want the smaller experience, like every acquisition, right?
And absolutely.
But the integration of the two companies has been unbelievable. And we've seen that because our Q4 was just so good.
Wow. And so how has your role changed? So you said now that you're leading all of marketing across Seismic. So I'm guessing your headcount increased, direct reports? Entire team increased?
Right? Yeah. So it didn't increase, but that's because I had the outbound BDRs at Lessonly. So it's actually maintained fairly similar, but I have a larger team that only focuses on corporate marketing, right? So demand, campaigns, content, web, brand, creative, events, field marketing. So we're between 40 and 50 people, and we also have inbound SDRs. The outbound BDR team lives in sales at Seismic. So it's a fairly similar size. It's just I have a larger team that focuses on a very specific thing.
Gotcha. Yeah. And I remember, I think it was a few years ago that you rolled the BDR team, the outbound team into marketing. And, and I thought that was very interesting. And as I heard you explain why, it made complete sense because they're responsible for leads.
Yeah. And you want to unite top of funnel, like tip of the spear. And I think that what's important to note is that every company is different. Every strategy is different. What worked for me at Lessonly will not work for me at Seismic. And what worked for me at Seismic won't necessarily work for me. So at Lessonly, it just worked really well because everybody was kind of rowing down the same. They weren't going against the current. Like that was, it just worked.
And I think that's an important lesson for leaders, existing leaders, people who want to be in a leadership role is there really is no kind of cookie cutter map, right? That what worked at one company is not necessarily going to work at another company. You have to be really flexible, agile, and open-minded to a lot of things, right?
Yeah. The advice that I would have, the one thing that does maintain itself across different sizes and different markets is you, as a leader, you have to find your niche and find it early, right? Some people are revenue marketers, some are demand, some specialize in organic search. Some specialize in content marketing. I started in content marketing, but I've niched myself in brand with a secondary focus on demand, right? But you have to find your niche because then you fully understand how to hire the right people around you in order to make up for your deficiencies. And it's not a deficiency because you're not talented. It's a deficiency because you're just not spending time in it, because it's unrealistic for leaders to assume that you can understand everything. I think it's a lost cause. I don't think you should do it. You should hire the people that know what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think that a lot of leaders come in with kind of a T-shaped marketing focus where they might be really good in one area and have a broad knowledge? Or do you feel like the best leaders kind of branch off and have several areas where they know very well and kind of more broad or
I think it's more, I think it's more T-shaped.
Is it?
But I don't even, you know, it's easy to think through when it's T-shaped, but the reality is that you got to have your niche. But there's also the other side of it where I'm finding that at a certain point of growth and at a certain point of company size, your niche doesn't even matter. Your responsibility is to you serving your team no matter what. Because, you know, even at Lessonly, when we moved the outbound BDR team over, we raised our Series C, the team started expanding pretty drastically, right? Past 100 employees. Your job as an exec at a company that's scaling that fast is mostly alignment. Like you're actually not doing work. So your niche doesn't particularly matter other than you have the subject matter expertise to speak to it. Your job is to make sure that all those talented people that you hired don't have obstacles in their way. And if they do, it's your job to remove them in a way that's meaningful. And I have learned that over the past year.
Yeah. And do you feel any sense of, you know, that, you know, because you were a marketer, you came in, you're leading marketing, but your focus has shifted and it's more team, people focused strategy. Do you ever feel like you're kind of losing touch with what's happening in marketing, or do you have a pretty good pulse still on that?
I don't feel like I'm losing touch because what is fundamental to scaling a company hasn't changed that much. Mm. Like you could, you know, I briefly thought I was losing touch when Twitter Spaces started ramping and there was that Clubhouse app. And guess what? Email marketing, direct mail, like paid advertising, organic search, they're all fundamental. And we could talk about how TikTok drives growth, but guess what? Like I'm not in a space where that particularly matters, right? So the way that I keep up with stuff is with my network, with my peer group. Like I try as much as possible to meet with people. That's how you and I originally met, where we're talking about what's working and what's not. And that's how I learn about things like ABM and website personalization. And then it's up to me to try to figure out if that's a strategy, if that's something that should fit in our strategy. And if it is, how do you resource it appropriately? I joined an email marketing company in 2012 called ExactTarget. And at that time, part of our running joke at keynotes was everybody saying email's dying. That's 2012.
Yeah.
And ExactTarget IPO'd and was acquired by Salesforce for a lot of money. And they're still doing email marketing, right?
Exactly. And I mean, in just the last year, maybe it's been longer than that time, is just kind of some weird blur now. But I mean, newsletters started coming out of the woodwork, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, everybody wants a newsletter.
Substack and it's unbelievable. I mean, like, but you said it. It is not the tool. Like, a lot of people think about like bright, shiny objects and stuff like that. And, you know, how, what's the new realm of communication? And the reality is that what allows you to tell the best story possible that connects with the user, with the audience. And that's it. I don't care if it's email. I don't care if it's a written letter. It does not matter to me as long as it works, right?
Exactly. And how important do you, would you say copywriting is in marketing? Do you think it's a core competency?
It's a core competency. Now, that being said, I don't think you need to be great at copywriting and be a leader. Like, I'm terrible at it. Terrible. Like, I borrowed this from, or stole it from, the CEO of ExactTarget, Scott Dorsey, who now runs a venture capital studio called High Alpha. And at ExactTarget, he wrote a Friday email to the entire company for years. When, after our acquisition, we published a Friday note book and everything. So I stole it from him, but I write this Friday note every week to the marketing team. And I have Olivia, who's on the content team, she edits it. And it is embarrassing how much she has to edit of my my copywriting skills. But that being said, I just, if you're coming out of school and you want to be in marketing, I would highly recommend spending a ton of time and energy learning how to copyright, learning how to write long form, short form, mid form. It's a skill that not a lot of people have, like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the irony is we both have written books, and yet we both feel like copywriting is one of our weaknesses. So,
well, you can ask my editor. I had like five of them that edited my books. So you just need to be able to type.
Yeah. Idea to page.
Idea to paper, type.
And let someone else.
Here, you fix
it up. Exactly. And so when you were at ExactTarget, were you part of that Salesforce acquisition, or did you leave before that happened?
Yeah, I had joined, 2 years before the acquisition, and I stayed a year after at Salesforce. You know, it's just very different experiences, much like the Leslie Seismic, at a very different scale. But
yeah, were there things that prepared you for when the Seismic deal happened, or was it just so different and so much time had gone by that kind of created some differences too?
Yeah, I don't think it's actually, ExactTarget has been more influential for me at Seismic than necessarily the acquisition, because ExactTarget did a lot of things right on scaling culture with customers and the internal team that, you know, I think a lot of time and energy we're putting in at Seismic to kind of not recreate, but get more of that sense of culture. The acquisition was just so different. Like, ExactTarget was Seismic size, and we were put into a huge Salesforce, which, you know, at the time it was only 30, 40,000 employees. Now it's ungodly big, right? But it's different, because even though we were a big company, we felt like ExactTarget was big, but we realized pretty quickly that we weren't.
So, you know, as you've kind of gone through your experience and throughout your leadership journey, what do you feel was a key turning point, or the biggest event that happened that kind of changed everything for you? The light bulb went off and it's like, this is what being a leader means, or this is how I should do it.
Oh man, that's a great question. I've had a few. There's a couple. At ExactTarget, I had the opportunity at a younger age to build a team of highly skilled people that kind of synced with entry level individual contributors as a first-time manager. Like, that was pretty impactful for me because I realized how much influence I could personally have over careers and professional development. And, you know, a young woman that I hired as, you know, she was an intern at my agency, I think, or I maybe have interviewed for her. She interviewed as an intern, but I knew her from Anderson where we grew up. I hired her at ExactTarget and she's still at Salesforce and she is killing it.
Really?
And I will never credit her success to me hiring her because she is so good at what she does. And one of the turning points for me was just to realize that you can give people a chance as long as you fully understand how to see talent outside of skill set, right? And the second example of that is that Ben Battaglia, who runs brand and creative for Seismic now, he was working at a nonprofit and he really wanted the content marketing role at Lessonly. And he knocked a presentation out of the park during the interview process and we hired him. And it's one of the best hires I've ever made at Lessonly. He went on to run all of demand for Lessonly. He was chief of staff for Lessonly through the acquisition. He then came back to marketing to run brand and creative for Seismic, which is a huge international company. And he worked for a nonprofit before he joined Lessonly. And so the turning point for me was just understanding the value of seeing talent over somebody's resume, for number one. Another turning point is me separating my self-worth with my career. And it's still very difficult for me to do. But there's a point in Lessonly when it was pretty rough, like the growth was stalling, like it was just not a fun time. And I made the conscious decision to try to separate my self-worth from that because I felt very ineffective. And that was a huge moment for me because it helped me see kind of past my own head trash, right? And the fear of failure, getting past that fear portion of it and understanding that I am secure in the fact that I'm good at what I do and I need to just work really hard to try to get there. And if it fails, if it doesn't, great. That was a very long answer to your question, but just to recap, number one is seeing talent in people outside of a resume and experience set, and seeing them succeed is just so, like, it's why I manage. It's why I love it. And the second one is just removing your self-worth from failure or success within a job.
Yeah. Those are two great examples. And I haven't had a lot of experience in being able to hire the team that I inherited in my last role as a director. I inherited it. We didn't grow much. So I didn't really get a chance to do the hiring and watching them grow. And then the fear, I mean, that's such a big part of everything that we do, right? I mean, and I think it's even more difficult for people who on social, LinkedIn and Twitter, the good things that are happening, they don't really see behind the scenes and the fear. And I think you've done a great job of being open about that on LinkedIn, where I follow you more closely than probably Twitter. But, you know, cause I feel like I kind of know that time when that happened, because yeah. I feel like you were very open about it and talking about disconnecting and spending more time with your family and things like that.
You know, Seismic's been working a lot on mission, vision, values. And one of our new values is we are vulnerable. And being vulnerable is such a core part of being a great leader. And the fact that people think that leaders don't fail and aren't vulnerable and don't feel like they're ineffective every other day and have shitty days and all that is completely crazy. Like, you know, I have a hard time reading a lot of the social posts and LinkedIn posts from people where it's all rosy and it's here's the five steps to building a great business and all that crap, because it's dirty. And I, you know, especially in high growth software where you're raising money and it's about growth at all costs and all that stuff, that it's a very different type of mindset that you have to be in. And it's not perfect. And I'll have days where I'm like, I am terrible at my job. I'm so ineffective. This is embarrassing. I'm a failure, blah, 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 blah. And then the next day, you know, I'll have a better night of sleep and I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, it's exactly. Like, but you gotta, I think for me, you just have to, I have to be secure in the fact that I know what I'm doing, I'm good at what I do, and as long as I tackle challenges head on and wrestle them to the ground, I'm going to be more successful than I will.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, when I left my director role in August and decided to be my own boss, do my own thing, get into consulting and possibly build an agency, that's still, don't know if that's going to happen or not. But it was crazy, man, because when I was the director, I think there was just that kind of safety that, and it's almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? When you've got certain things taken care of,
yeah,
you can focus on other things. And I felt like I was kind of creeping up on that self-actualization piece. And I was more confident and I was learning like crazy and sharing like crazy and ideas were coming and I was connecting dots and sharing that connection on LinkedIn. That's one of the things I enjoy the most is just connecting dots between different things and then sharing the idea, right? And then I left and the imposter syndrome just overwhelmed me. And I just didn't feel like posting anymore. I suddenly, like the only thing that changed was my title, right? But overnight I felt
like
no one wants to hear what I have to say. Right. I don't know what I'm doing now. So what am I going to post about, right? And I still haven't gotten over it 6 months later of feeling comfortable and I'm not posting every day like I was. I'm not writing anymore like I was. And it's just crazy how one little shift, nothing else changed. Not a single thing changed, right?
But here's the thing. You got to be okay with that, right? Like there was a week last month where I just did not, I did not want to post. I did not care. I was just down. And one day I just said to myself, you know what? It's all right. It's all right to feel this way. You'll get through it. There's a lot going on. And there was a piece to that I hadn't had felt before because I always felt like I had to move. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why I thought that, but it was refreshing like that I could just take a breath and not feel like I have to do and give myself some sympathy and leniency, right? Because that's important.
Yeah, I think the giving yourself grace and the sympathy.
Yeah, that's
is huge.
Better way to say it. Give yourself grace for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's tough, man, and it's tough. So,
but then again, you put all of this in perspective with the 2 years that we had and what's happening in the geopolitical sphere with Ukraine. That's also added a complete different layer where, you know, I'll be like concerned about a top of funnel growth for a segment, and I hear that a friend of a friend died of COVID or all the stuff that's happening in Ukraine. Like it's. Mm-hmm. You got to put things in perspective. And it's very important to do that as a leader because it helps you lead if you do that.
Yeah. And I just feel like you just kind of, whether you realize it or not, almost start to feel the weight over time of just pile on after pile on, right? Of COVID and Ukraine. Yeah. And even though it's not directly affecting us, you never know. I mean,
the only other thing I would note is it relates to, you know, mindset and head trash. And as especially with leaders that are in high growth software, a lot of people join startups and venture backed companies for the end goal, right? The end goal could be a huge acquisition where your shares are worth a lot of money or an IPO and then an acquisition. What I have learned is that you have to spend more time trying to figure out why you love what you do outside of I'm going to get paid if this works out. Because take it from me, getting paid because it works out, you're just going to go back to wanting to do it again, especially if you love it, right? And so, or you get paid and you realize, man, I don't want to do this again, right? So everybody strives for this end goal. And the reality is that there's really no end goal if you're driven. And you just need to keep that in mind because you're gonna hit that end goal and you're gonna sit back and be like, oh, that wasn't as satisfying as I thought as I thought it would be.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, yeah, what is the end, right?
I will never stop. I will never retire. This is me. Yeah,
same here.
Why? If you enjoy what you do, why would you?
Exactly. And I think one last thing real quick. You had mentioned that you're going through at Seismic kind of a mission exercise and looking at values and mission and things like that. And And I think when you think about a goal, an end goal, which I agree, I don't think there really is an end goal, which is, I think, why this is so important is, you know, in December, after I had been doing this for a couple months and was starting to question, why did I take this risk? Why did I leave this stable, comfortable? And I think why I left it was too comfortable, right? I wasn't growing. I wasn't stretching. I felt stagnant. That was why. But I just started to question that. And in December, I sat down and realized I need to define my purpose and mission, and not just for my business, but for everything. And that was the best thing I could have done because it gave me clarity and purpose. And what I came up with was I took the risk that I took to not only have freedom, everybody wants freedom, right? But it was really, I want the ability to create experiences and memories for my family through what I do. It wasn't about building this business. It wasn't about getting a certain amount of money. Mm-hmm. It started to go beyond that. And so how important do you think that is for a leader, for a founder, for an owner of a company to maybe have a purpose and mission?
It is fundamental, in my opinion, to whatever the end goal is. But I've also seen companies that have grown pretty significantly without a mission and vision, right? But the founders' goals were to give their employees the ability to make money to care for their families to then affect their community, right? Mm. And Lessonly, you know, our mission statement was we help people do better work so they can live better lives. And that very much helped us grow and helped us have a unified mission, vision, values. Personally, I would say I need to do more work there in terms of a value statement. And there's an individual named Joe Stables, a friend of mine that I go to quite a bit as a mentor. He's a Seventh-day Adventist, and I am pretty much as close to an atheist as you can get, but I grew up Christian. And his comment to me during an interview where we talked about just fear of faith and fear of the church, his comment to me was he doesn't care where faith or belief is set. He cares about values. He's always had a set of values as an individual, and he will go back to those values constantly. And it really helped me as a person say, okay, well, I need to spend time and energy thinking through my value statement, not necessarily mission and vision, because I feel like yours is great, by the way. I might steal it, honestly, because that's exactly what I want to do. But it was more, I need to spend more time just figuring out a value statement as an individual, not necessarily a SVP of marketing.
And I think when I reflected on what I came up with as my reason and mission and purpose, what I found is when it is more personal, it's like that, it helps you get through the tough days, to be a professional, right? Because you're going to have bad days and you're going to still have to show up. And if you just have a money goal or something that's not as personal, then I feel like it's harder, as Seth Godin would say, like when you're running a marathon, great marathoners know where to put the tired. So they can keep going. And I think it helps you find a place to put whatever you're feeling and keep going, right? Rather than just have a more monetary, quantitative goal.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And I think you learn through experience, and anything that's quantitative measurement is fleeting. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that much. Unless it's like the amount of kids you want to have or whatever.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Thanks, man. I really appreciate you coming on today and chatting about this. I think it'd be super helpful for a lot of people.
Sure.
And as always, great to catch up.
Yeah, you too, man. I appreciate it.
And that wraps up this edition of Marketing Unboxed. Just want to thank you for listening. And thank you for continuing to tune in. If you enjoyed the show, if you enjoy the podcast, please give it a rating, give it a review on Apple. I think you could do the same thing on Spotify. And if it's something you can do on any other platform, please do it. I really appreciate it. And it just helps and get the word out. And until next time, I'm out.